This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bob Holdsworth is the founder and president at VirginiaTomorrow.com. He joins us every Monday afternoon to explore Virginia politics. And Bob, you got some interesting breaking news of your own this afternoon coming out of Richmond involving gun legislation. What's that all about?
Well, Coy, as you know, the House passed, a passel of gun legislation, pro-Second Amendment legislation, as they like to call it, this year. And the real question was, what was the Senate going to do about it? This had received a lot of national attention. The New York Times had done a story on it. And in particular, there was a focus on the bill that would allow someone to carry a gun into a bar and restaurant so long as they weren't going to drink alcohol. And then secondly, the potential repeal of Doug Wilder's signature legislation, One Gun a Month. And what's obviously now happened is that Henry Marsh, the chair of the Senate Courts of Justice Committee, has proposed that a special subcommittee is going to be formed simply to look at all the gun legislation. And what he's done is that he has stacked the subcommittee with opponents of the kind of legislation that was passed in the House. So they're going to get this legislation on Thursday, and they're going to kill it all.
So this is really interesting. So the Democratic-controlled Senate in Virginia is creating a special ad hoc subcommittee and funneling all gun-related legislation to that committee. And the Democrats are putting on that committee people who, and it's only people who are going to be on the committee are people who oppose any of this legislation.
Right, there's one Republican on it, Fred Quayle, and Quayle has basically said he's against repeal of One Gun a Month, Fred Quayle from Chesapeake. So that's essentially what's happening. It keeps people who are on the Courts of Justice Committee who favored repeal, for example, during the campaign, like Cree Deeds, from having to cast a vote, and the subcommittee is just going to kill all of this, and all of the attention that the House got on these bills is really going to be kind of removed almost in one fell swoop with what the Senate subcommittee is going to do.
We're talking with Bob Holdsworth. VirginiaTomorrow.com is the website. Is there any pushback, or has anybody come forward and said, no, we shouldn't do this, or is it just...
Well, I don't see that right now. I think that, in fact, there are probably a lot of Democrats who are pretty relieved that they won't have to cast the kind of vote that will, anger some of the gun rights groups or anger the NRA. But at the same time, most of the Democrats who are going to be on this subcommittee are in districts that are going to share their position, for the most part, on the bill. So for the Democrats, it's probably the perfect answer. It enables them to draw a contrast with the Republicans, but at the same time keeps specific Democratic legislators from having to cast votes that could be potentially unpopular.
And like reconciliation, so much of what we're hearing, the big word we're hearing coming out of Washington, that the Democrats might just call for a simple majority vote instead of a supermajority. This is allowed? This is a normal rule that's allowed, the special committee?
Henry Marsh has said that obviously it has nothing to do, he says, with wanting to kill these bills. It's simply related to trying to expedite the work of a committee that's overburdened with legislation, and they wouldn't be able to get done on time if they weren't able to form this special subcommittee.
I love it. Bob Holdsworth, founder and president at VirginiaTomorrow.com. Must reading for folks who want to follow Virginia politics. That's really interesting. Love when they do stuff like that. It's so interesting. Hey, Bob, tell me one thing, though. As long as we're on the subject of the Second Amendment, one thing I have never understood I'm curious what these advocates for, like the NRA, where are they ultimately going? I mean, do they just want to return to where it's the Wild West and people just walk around with guns on their in holsters?
I think there are different groups who are pro Second Amendment cause who have different positions. I think the NRA is really, by and large, trying to protect what they consider to be the legitimate rights of gun owners and hunters and sportsmen. And their position has always been that if you enable some of these gun control advocates to begin to win some victories, they'll ultimately attack the rights of people, who are just plain old sportsmen who have no interest in buying a passel of guns every day or the like. On the other hand, there are some pro-Second Amendment gun rights groups who essentially believe that if people carried more all the time, it might actually be a public safety measure and good crime prevention. And so what a number of these groups often have advocated, and, you know, they've gone into many city councils, for example, throughout the country and throughout Virginia, particularly in urban areas, openly carrying, because, you know, the law essentially says that you need a permit to carry a concealed weapon, but you don't need a permit to carry openly. So in many instances, what they'll do to, you know, punctuate their point is to attempt to enter a city council meeting openly carrying with sort of holsters out on their shoulder and the like, in order to make the point that they're intending to make. For example, a number of folks believe, and I think they believe very sincerely, that perhaps the massacre at Tech wouldn't have been as bad, or Columbine wouldn't have been as bad if teachers and faculty members were carrying. And so essentially what they'd like to do is to open up legislation that is preventing guns from being on schools and university campuses and enable at least faculty and administrative personnel to carry. So, you know, these are the kind of beliefs they have. These are the kind of issues that they're very interested, I think, in promoting. But at least right now in Virginia, they're all going to die, I think, at the hands of the Senate.
42 minutes after 4 o'clock, we're talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. This is News Radio 1070 WINA, and Eric is on the line in Charlottesville. Eric, you're on with Bob Holsworth. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I think the Democrats that are doing this are doing so at great risk to their own political necks, because I think the national Democrats have figured out that they don't want to touch this issue with a 10-foot pole, and they can try to sort of create a new committee to hide behind it, but this is going to generate this is going to generate more political heat than they're going to know what to do with. And you know, the question of one gun a month was in many cases about, for people that are pro Second Amendment, a question of sort of consistency and precedent. I mean, we wouldn't put up with a law that allowed people to only say one prayer a month or read one book or give one speech a month. So law-abiding citizens and collectors were concerned about a bill that limited their Second Amendment rights in a time frame that they could see being potentially expanded at the whim of the state. If they wanted to make it 2 months, 3 months, a year, then they could do that once they established that kind of a time frame. So this sort of a legislative trick is rather transparent, and you know, it can be responded to politically, and I think they're gonna have to deal with the results. And even if they think their districts are safe, I think they might be surprised to see the kind of heat they get from doing this.
Eric, great call. Thanks so much. Bob, is what's your read on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question, and there's really two components to it, Coy. You know, the first component, as far as I gather, is, you know, what's going to be the political fallout for this? And my sense, it really kind of depends on where you are and whether or not the Democrats have succeeded, you might say, in sheltering people who don't have to vote for them for any of the fallout. The caller thinks that they haven't. My sense is that it's going to be difficult to pin, in some instances, the blockage of these bills on people, like whether it be Cree Deeth or some of the rural Democrats that you see. So that point is an interesting one. I'm not exactly sure how it will play out. Secondly, on the one gun a month bill, I think the caller expressed in a very eloquent way the essence of the position for the people who want the repeal. They see it as simply a violation of constitutional rights by putting an unfair limit on it. I think the other side would argue that there really isn't a widespread interest in repealing one gun a month. There's not a lot of Virginians out there, they would argue, you know, who are clamoring to buy more than one handgun a month or two in their family a month, and that by and large this has worked fairly well in their minds, and supporters of one gun a month, to limit the reputation of Virginia as a gun-running state. That what they argued happened is that people were coming down on the I-95 corridor, you know, often using drug money to buy a ton of guns and then taking them either here in Virginia or elsewhere and committing crimes with that. So my sense that one gun a month, actually, I believe, is probably relatively popular in a lot of the metropolitan areas of the state, including a number of ones which Republicans represent. But my overall sense is that the caller makes a very interesting point, and that is, how is this going to play out politically? The Democrats think it's going to play out pretty well for them because, by and large, for most Democrats, they think their core constituency expects this. The Democrats who I think are a little more fearful and maybe a little more anxious about that are those Democrats, particularly moderate to conservative Democrats, who represent primarily rural constituencies. So I thought it was an excellent call, and I thought the caller expressed the point of view of the folks who are going to be angry at what the Senate is going to do about as well as can be expressed, actually.
Yeah, terrific call. Thank you, Eric. And we got a line open at 977-1070. We are talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob, you have some news on your website that House Majority Leader Morgan Griffith looks like he is going to run for Congress in the 9th District. What's this about?
Well, he's going to take on, in all likelihood, Rick Boucher. And it's going to be a very fascinating race because Boucher's district is one that has turned, probably was never in favor of Obama, and now has turned, you know, with huge numbers against Obama and against the agenda of the National Democratic Party. At the same time, Rick Boucher himself has been very, very popular in this district, done a lot of constituent service, brought in a lot of money, very well supported by the local elected officials and by the business community. But if there's a year in which Boucher could potentially be vulnerable, it's 2010. So what's going to happen now is that everybody is looking at this upcoming race as a potential marquee race. The challenge for Morgan Griffith, who I think is a great politician and going to be an absolutely fine campaigner, is that he doesn't essentially live in the district right now. He lives right adjacent to it. But more so than that, that hasn't been his political base, you might say, over the years. So Griffith is going to have to introduce himself to a lot of people in the district. And then secondly, what he's going to have to argue is that he's going to have to argue that despite what Boucher may have done over the years for the constituents in the district, the point of view that the Democrats represent right now is simply unacceptable and he needs to be removed. Very interesting race. A very tough guy to beat. That Boucher has been a very savvy, cagey politician for decades here in Virginia.
Yeah, and I was going to add, he certainly had brought home the bacon to his district as well, has he not?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, you know, the other day he issued a you know, a press release just listing the number of people from the business community in the district that supports him, and it's impressive. So. You know, Morgan Griffith is going to have to run a grassroots campaign. He's going to have to tap that resentment and anger at Washington that's out there, and he's going to have to somehow attach that anger and resentment to some of Rick Boucher's votes.
Bob, before we let you go, let's follow up real quickly to news you helped break last week regarding the statement that Bob Marshall made. You were right. We called it here. It went national news. He was one of the worst people in the world, according to Keith Olbermann on MSNBC. It was hitting all the blogs and the national papers. But Bob Marshall came back and was claiming that he wasn't treated fairly and he was misquoted. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a very interesting dynamic that occurred because, you know, the first thing that Marshall did, which I thought was the right thing, is that he apologized. He basically said that he had a poor choice of words. He hadn't expressed himself appropriately, and he was really upset with himself with the fact that so many people who had supported it, expanding treatment and expanding opportunities for children and families of children with disabilities would be angered at Marshall, who himself, Coy, has often been a lonely voice in the General Assembly.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
In favor of expanded treatment.
Yes.
As the week went on, he then said that he was slandered by the initial report out of the student reporter who broke the story, that he had never directly said that having a child with disabilities was God's punishment for having a previous abortion. And so you then now had this story where Marshall was basically suggesting he was the victim of a media hit, but at the same time, the governor of his own party called his comments offensive. Bob McDonnell took a stand on this. I think what you can say is that Marshall's initial apology for poorly chosen words was certainly accurate at a minimum. Unfortunately, the initial story did not mention Marshall's longtime support for kids with disability, which might have leavened or modulated the story a little bit. But that's the, almost the consequence of, you know, maybe having student media, but even more than that, having a media that may not have a long historical memory these days.
Yeah, but the guy wasn't misquoted. I mean, there is film of, there's video of this, of his statements.
Yeah,
it's on YouTube.
Look at the video. I mean, but the video, as I said, at a minimum, I think what you have to say is that there was poorly chosen words, that he certainly linked, abortions to disabilities, and then he also suggested that certainly, there was some action taken, which by the Almighty that linked these two in some fashion.
Yeah.
So whether he precisely used the word punishment, it seems that he did not in that particular context, but at the same time, he himself said they were very poorly chosen words, and you saw what Governor McDonnell said about them as well.
Yeah.
My sense is that the major mistake, I think, on the part of the media at the outset was not linking this, and people like Olbermann and Maddow certainly had no interest in doing that, to the fact that, last year Bob McDonnell almost got removed from his own caucus for criticizing how the Republicans handled autism treatment issues.
Yeah.
So that wasn't there. But my sense is that there are a lot of Republicans who just wish this would go away because, if you take a look at it, probably the one legislator in Virginia that people outside the district may know by name by now is Bob Marshall.
Bob Holdsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Check out the website. Lots of good stuff there. We talk to him every Monday afternoon. Bob, thank you, sir. Have a great week.
Always great to be here, Coy. You take care.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.